Welcome and thank you for joining us today for today's webinar, Working with Families, Tips for Effective Communication and Strategies for Challenging Situations. This is Amity Overall-Lade, Manager of Long-Term Care Ombudsman Program and Policy with the National Ombudsman Resource Center. We are going to cover a lot of material today in the next 90 minutes, so I would like to review a few housekeeping tips and then get started. During the webinar, all lines are muted. If you have a question, please post your question using the chat feature on the left side of your screen. We will keep track of the incoming questions and do our best to respond during the open discussion portion of today's webinar. When it is time for open discussion, we will ask you to raise your hand and tell you how to unmute your line before speaking. Also, as you may have heard just a moment ago, this webinar is being recorded and will be available on our website with the resources mentioned in the near future. So, the goal of today's webinar is to assist ombudsmen in working with family members. We will discuss key communication techniques and tips, some of which we understand you may already be familiar with, review strategies for challenging situations, discuss the questions we sent earlier, and introduce new resources. Since we are covering a variety of information, there will be something for everyone, whether you're a new ombudsman or have years of experience. When we discuss the scenarios, we will hear from some of your peers, specifically Lynn Person, the state ombudsman for Washington, D.C., Cindy Englert, a local ombudsman from Charlotte, North Carolina, and Carmen Castro, a local ombudsman from Houston, Texas. Please note that we will refer to working with family members during this webinar, but this is also applicable to working with non-family legal representatives. Also, these communication strategies and skills can apply to your work with residents, friends of residents, facility staff, and other individuals. Our agenda for today's training is as follows. We'll discuss the role of the ombudsman when working with families, tips for effective communication, strategies for challenging situation, review the scenarios and discussion questions, and if we have time, open the line for question and answer, and then, of course, have our closing. Before we delve into communication tips and strategies, I wanted to give you some statistics regarding ombudsman work with families. As you know, ombudsmen frequently work with and interact with family members. According to the 2011 NORS data, family members or friends filed the second highest number of complaints with the ombudsman program. As you can see, residents had over 49,000 complaints filed with the ombudsman program, and right behind that were relatives or friends with over 25,000 complaints. Ombudsmen obviously work with family members in other capacities other than just complaints. So a quick review of the other activities also from 2011 NORS data would be over 200,000 consultations to individuals. Now obviously we cannot determine how many of those were directly with family members or relatives, but I can guarantee that a lot of them were. Over 3,000 family council meetings were attended by ombudsmen. And ombudsmen held over 12,000 community education sessions. Now, obviously, there's a variety of community education sessions. However, some of those probably included current or potentially future family members. It is important for the ombudsman to work with families for a variety of reasons. For example, family members may be the legal representative and or the complainant. You may gain information about the resident that you couldn't get anywhere else, especially if the resident cannot speak for herself. So the resident's preferences, social history, routines, values, and so on. You'll learn a lot about family dynamics, which could be very helpful during complaint resolution or working with care plan meetings and so on. Or a resident may need family support, especially if, let's say, that they're transitioning out of a nursing home back into the community, then they really could use that family support at that time. You may need to empower family members for self-advocacy, which we will discuss later this afternoon. And also important is that family members share their experiences with the Ombudsman program with other individuals. So hopefully they're sharing their positive experiences that they had with the Ombudsman program, because that would really help out in the community as well as in the facility with other family members and residents. So throughout this afternoon's presentation, we are going to do a few poll questions, and we'll start with the first one right now. The first question is, have you experienced any of the following situations? If so, please select the one you've experienced the most often. I could not spell out family member. There wasn't enough space, so that's what FM stands for. The family member doesn't want to work with a specific ombudsman. A family member wishes a conflict with the resident's wishes. A family member monopolizes your time. So, for example, they make a lot of phone calls and very lengthy emails and so on. Or a family member is suspected of abuse or exploitation. So go ahead and select your answer. Wow. That's really interesting. Thank you so much for your answers. It looks like the majority of the respondents have experienced when a family member's wishes conflict with a resident's. And that will be discussed during today's webinar and discussed even in greater detail in the resource paper that was written and that is the backbone of today's presentation, which we'll discuss a little bit later. And all of these four topics, just so you know, are addressed in that family member skills training paper that I mentioned, and we'll discuss that later in the presentation. So thank you for responding. Effective communication is the foundation of ombudsman work and vital for successful advocacy. We've discussed the importance of ombudsman work with families, so for the next part of this presentation, we will review some quick tips of key communication techniques and discuss some critical steps and tips when working with family members for residents. In addition to ombudsmen refining their communication skills during initial certification training and reviewing other ombudsman materials such as the NORC curriculum, here are some quick tips for effective communication. As mentioned earlier, these tips and techniques are also helpful when speaking with residents, staff, and other individuals, especially during problem solving or conflict resolution. So use I statements. That means owning your statement and views and not claiming to speak for others. Avoid saying you, as people may feel as if they're being accused. So for example, don't say when you, instead say what I would like to see happen is. Avoid emotive words that are tied to a person's perception. As you know, we all perceive things and interpret things differently. So, for example, don't say she barged into the room when you're describing an incident. You could say you need to use a more neutral, factual statement, such as she came into the room suddenly. That takes the emotion out of the statement and is just providing the facts. Another tip would be to use open-ended questions. Using open-ended questions really helps you build a rapport and shows that you have empathy whenever you're listening to someone. You may actually gain more information from an individual instead of asking closed questions, which usually give you yes or no answers. Avoid asking why, because similar to using you in a question or a statement, people may feel like they're being accused, attacked, or you're judging their behavior. So instead, use how, or tell me, or what. For example, don't say, why were you late this morning? Instead, say, help me understand what made you late this morning. As you can see, even just saying those two phrases, you have a different tone, and I think the individual would perceive one better over the other. Another example would be reflective listening. Reflective listening is a way to validate and affirm the speaker by giving them the experience of really being heard and acknowledged. So in your ombudsman work, you probably learned a lot and read a lot about active listening. This is very similar. You would restate in your own words the content and or the feeling of what someone tells you. And some types of reflective listening include paraphrasing, reflecting, feeling, and summarizing. So to give you an example, a family member approaches you and says, "My mother's had a lot of issues regarding her meals recently. Her meals are often cold and bland. When she asks about an alternative, they only offer a sandwich. We've addressed these concerns, but it only gets better for a week or so." So some examples of responses you could use using these three types of reflective listening would be, if you paraphrase, you could say, "You and your mother have addressed concerns about food temperature, taste, and lack of variety, but it's an ongoing issue." To reflect feeling, you could say, "It must be frustrating that your mother's concerns have not been resolved and she's not enjoying her dining experience." And to summarize, you could go a step further and say, "It must be frustrating that your mother's not enjoying her dining experience, especially since you have both addressed these concerns on multiple occasions with the staff. I would be happy to speak with your mother and see if I can provide assistance and advocacy regarding her dietary concerns." So I'd like to ask our second poll question. If you've used any of the previous techniques, which one do you find the most effective? I statements, open-ended questions, reflective listening, or you haven't used any of those techniques? Reflective listening. Well, great. I'm really glad to see our responses so far that everybody that you at least used one of those techniques, so that's excellent. Thank you for sharing. It's important to remember that by the time a family member contacts you, they've probably been dealing with issues regarding their loved one's care for a while and may be frustrated. Also, an ombudsman is often the first person to really listen to and acknowledge what the family member is saying. Since it is critical to establish good communication and an understanding of the role of the ombudsman when working with families, it's important to remember the following when speaking with a family member for the very first time. Remember to use reflective listening, which we just discussed. Discuss the role of the ombudsman, which we'll talk about in a couple slides. Determine their motivation by asking them what outcome they're seeking. And that's really important because that will guide you in how you respond after speaking with them. For example, if they respond when you ask them what outcome they're seeking, that they want the administrator fired, you can understand immediately that that is not really a resident-centered outcome. And then work with them to really figure out what their complaint's about. Be clear about what you can and cannot do, and inform them that your next step will be speaking with the resident. When communicating the role of the Ombudsman Program, it's really clear, as we just said, that you need to establish a clear understanding during that first conversation. So to give you a few tips and things that ombudsmen use when they're out in the field, an example would be, "I am a resident advocate. I'm here for your mother and what she needs, and hopefully we can all work together on this." So you're very clearly outlining who your client is, but you're also extending to them the opportunity to all work together after you speak with the resident. Now, you may have experienced whenever you tell this to a family member that they respond that their loved one has dementia or some other lacks capacity and cannot communicate. So a response you may want to use in that situation would be, "I understand what you're saying. I will go and see her, and after visiting with her, we'll see how to proceed from there." An ombudsman's credibility directly affects their effectiveness as an ombudsman. Ombudsmen build credibility by being knowledgeable and accurate in what they say and do. First and foremost, as an ombudsman, you need to be direct and honest about what you can and cannot do. Ombudsmen also need to make sure their actions do not convey the wrong message. Now, some of these actions may be something that's really natural and occurs without thinking, so ombudsmen need to be very mindful to do their best to avoid actions or statements that could lead to misperceptions of conflict of interest or their role as a resident advocate. So, for example, a resident invites you, the ombudsman, to an upcoming care plan meeting to discuss some concerns that she has about her care. She just wants some extra support. She's also invited her family members to attend that care plan meeting. So you show up to the facility a few minutes early, and the administrator happens to be in his office, so you stop by and speak with him in order to follow up on a complaint involving a different situation and a completely different resident. After you arrive, the family members arrive, headed to the care plan meeting, and they see you in the administrator's office talking to him. And in the back of their mind, they wonder if you're talking about their loved one before the care plan meeting starts and perhaps discussing their concerns. And then they may start questioning really your role if you really are a resident advocate or if there's some kind of conflict of interest. So that's just one example. Some ways to help avoid or minimize misperceptions and establish credibility include the following. Be clear and direct about the role. Meet with family members and residents before meetings that are scheduled with the facility and walk in together. So instead of stopping by the administrator's office, head straight to the resident's room, meet with the resident and the family, and then go in together. Sit next to the resident if possible, especially, you know, obviously if the resident's there, or next to the family member during meetings with facility staff. When you interact with facility staff, whether it's in the facility or outside in the community, say you run into them at a grocery store, be professional and courteous, but not overly friendly. For example, certainly offer a handshake, but don't offer a hug. If you know the staff member, perhaps you went to college or nursing school with that staff person, or they're a former colleague, then make sure to disclose that information with the family member, resident, that you're working with, just to be clear from the get-go so they understand that prior relationship and that it won't impact your advocacy on behalf of the resident. So due to concern for their loved one, family members may not understand why the resident doesn't want to pursue a complaint or really fully understand the ombudsman limitations without resident consent. In addition to explaining the Older Americans Act confidentiality requirement and your role as the resident advocate, you may want to address the following points. So whenever you're going back to the family member after the resident does not give you consent to pursue a complaint that the family member thinks is important, some points you may want to address are the resident's potential fear of retaliation, how it would really feel, try to put the family member in the resident's shoes about living in that facility and being dependent on the care of the staff 24/7. Explain to the family member that the resident often gives up a lot of their daily routines. They're no longer driving. They cannot leave the facility often without assistance. They cannot sometimes even leave their own room or transfer to the restroom without assistance. So they have a lot of limitations. And it's really important when they can make choices for them to regain some control over their life and be able to be supported in the choices that they make. Explain to the family that the resident's priorities simply may differ from their family member. Perhaps that resident doesn't think that that concern is really that big of an issue and they don't want to pick that fight. And remind the family member that despite the resident's impairments, they're still adults and they still have rights, and it's really important to support their rights. That being said, although a resident does not want you to pursue a complaint, saying to a family member, well, I can't do anything because I don't have the resident's consent, is not the best or even oftentimes the most accurate response. Please remember that ombudsmen have alternatives to choose from in responding to this situation. For example, emphasize what you can do. Remind the family that you can check in with their loved one during future visits to, one, make sure that the resident's still doing well, and two, maybe the resident's changed their mind and they do want to pursue that complaint. Encourage the family member to share their concerns with the resident. It's possible that after the family member speaks with the resident and explains why they're concerned, then maybe a resident will want to take action or work together with their family member to try to resolve this. Share observations of the resident with the family member. So without breaking any kind of confidentiality, you can share with the family member that when you visited with their loved one, she seemed really happy. She was very active. She was out doing activities, and you actually had to go find her and see how she was doing. She's very pleased with her resident or with her roommate. And just really point out the positive aspects and share your observations with a family member. That may bring them some comfort. See if if other residents have a similar complaint, and then pursue that as a general complaint, a broader complaint, without jeopardizing any confidentiality. And you could inform the family members of steps they can take on their own, which we will discuss shortly. Just as it is important for ombudsmen to have effective communication skills when working with family members, it is important for family members to have strong communication skills in order to work cooperatively with facility staff. Ombudsmen can provide tools to help family members refine their communication skills when working with facility staff regarding their loved one's care, as well as inform them of steps they can take to advocate for their loved one. So some barriers for self-advocacy that a family member may be experiencing may be very similar to what residents experience. They may fear retaliation by the facility either towards their loved one if they complain or themselves. They may fear that their visits may be restricted. They may be unsure on how to even address concerns. They don't know that they should go talk to the director of nursing or social worker depending on the type of complaint. They may be afraid that the facility will consider them and label them as a complainer or someone that's difficult to work with, and then just dismiss their concerns altogether. So some tips would be to remind family members of the applicable regulations, such as the right to voice grievances without fear of reprisal. Encourage them to document all aspects of their complaint process and the facility's response. So if they ever feel like there's been retaliation, then they'll have adequate documentation whenever they have to file a complaint about that. And share information and resources regarding the problem-solving process, which we will discuss shortly. One of the primary goals of the Ombudsman Program is to empower others to speak up on their own behalf. Oftentimes, that means providing information and tools to family members so they can effectively communicate with facilities to resolve problems. When family members are empowered to speak with the facility staff on their own, instead of involving outside resources such as the Ombudsman Program, it really promotes a better working relationship between the facility and staff. However, it is very important to remember that by empowering family members, it doesn't mean that we're overstepping the rights of the resident. So, for example, prior to discussing problem-solving skills with families, ombudsmen should encourage those family members to speak with their loved one to see if they actually share their concerns and if the resident wants to do anything about those concerns. Urge family members to honor the resident's wishes and/or preferences. Obviously, an ombudsman cannot ensure that that will happen. However, it's important to explain why it's important to consult with the resident and be guided by the loved one and why that's so important. So, as I mentioned briefly in the introduction, this webinar was developed based on a new NORC skills training paper with the same title as today's training. The paper provides more examples of communication techniques and resources that ombudsmen can share with family members regarding the problem-solving process. So, for example, the paper includes the following materials that ombudsmen could really pull together and distribute to family members as a family advocacy kit. There is a problem-solving process chart for families, which I'll show you on the next slide. A problem-solving worksheet for families, which is really the same content of the chart, but it gives space for the family members to document their concerns and document the steps they take in the process. And there's an example of the problem-solving worksheet, so when you give that to them, they will see how an example concern was worked through. There is a form called Documentation Tips for Family Members to help guide them through documenting important things. And, of course, a document called Strategies for Addressing Concerns in Long-Term Care Facilities, which would be very helpful in that kit. So I know, I do understand that it's really difficult to read this slide, but I did want to provide you with just a brief snapshot of what one of those resources look like that I mentioned. This chart is part of the paper and resources used to create the content of the webinar. And as you can see, there are 11 steps through this problem-solving process that family members can walk through on their own to promote self-advocacy. So that is just one of the many resources that are in this paper. So that brings us to the next portion of our webinar, and we'll be discussing the strategies for challenging situations. We did email out on a PDF, it was a PDF document attached to a ReadyTalk email, three scenarios, and we've asked three ombudsmen to respond to those. So we will go ahead and get started with that, and I will read the first scenario. A nursing home administrator, Ms. Jones, calls you stating a family member, Ms. Daniels, is difficult to work with, complains often, and is never pleased with the solution the facility offers to resolve her complaints. Ms. Jones also says the staff members are not comfortable assisting the resident, who is Ms. Daniels' father, because Ms. Daniels often yells at the staff. Ms. Jones also states that the resident is pleased with his care and does not agree with the complaints of his daughter. The administrator asks you to speak with Ms. Daniels. So the questions that came with that scenario are, what are your concerns? Since the administrator asked you to speak with a family member, what do you say and do in order to avoid being perceived as on the facility side when you speak with Ms. Daniels? And then write down a few statements you would make when speaking with the facility, Ms. Daniels, and the resident. So our respondent today is Cindy Englert. She's a local ombudsman from Charlotte, North Carolina. Cindy, to unmute your line if you haven't already, go ahead and hit star 7.
Thank you, Andy.
Thank you.
As I was looking at this scenario, one of my first concerns is when I am dealing with facilities, and a lot of facilities that contact us for technical assistance oftentimes don't always understand that when they make a direct request for us to attend meetings with difficult families or difficult residents, that in an effort to ensure that we don't come across as being on the facility side, I do oftentimes remind my administrators that although I am in place to give them technical assistance to make sure that they have tried everything that they can in dealing with a difficult resident or a difficult family, I do remind my administrators that they need to have the family or the resident contact me directly if they want me to participate in any sort of facility meeting. I remind that administrator that in an effort to ensure that I don't come across as being on the facility side, they are to represent the facility in a meeting by making sure that the family is the one that initiates my contact to make sure that they are requesting my involvement. Most of my administrators understand this concept, but do have to be reminded on a pretty regular basis. Now, I can't always ensure that the family will call me, and I try to remind my administrators this, that as I am there to represent the resident, I am also there to make sure that the family has an opportunity to express their concerns to me and not necessarily just what the administrator is concerned about. So what I will tell an administrator is that if the family does not contact me, one of the things I will do is make sure that I go by and take time to introduce myself to the facility and work with that family and explain to them who I am, what I do, what my role is, but I don't necessarily address the issues with the family that an administrator might have said to me or expressed to me. Again, I want the family to perceive me and to understand that my role is for the residents, for their rights, and that if the family understands who I am and what my role is, if they have concerns that rise to the level that they want my participation, oftentimes they will address those with me at that time. I will also go and visit with the resident and introduce myself directly to the resident. Again, explaining to them what I do, what my role is, and making sure that they understand if they have concerns, how I can help them, and what our program can offer to them. None of these, though, directly address any of the administrator's specific concerns that he wanted me to interact with the family about. If the resident doesn't perceive that there's any problem, just like Mrs. Daniel's father, when it states that he always states that he's very pleased with his care, when I introduce myself to him, he oftentimes will not have any concerns. So there may not be any opportunity for me to need to be involved on his behalf. Now, his daughter, on the other hand, who the facility is very concerned about, may or may not perceive me as someone that she feels can help her, and may choose not to express any of her concerns to me. She may choose not to request my involvement at all. And again, all I can really do is explain who I am and offer my assistance. Now, the one thing that I will do with the administrator, especially if the family does not request my involvement, the resident doesn't request my involvement, is, again, provide them technical assistance in some of the different ways to deal with difficult families, some of the different ways of dealing with challenging situations that may arise with family members. And oftentimes, I am more than willing to provide staff training. We will start oftentimes with residents' rights. We, in our region, have different trainings available and ones that deal specifically for staff in dealing with difficult residents, for staff in dealing with difficult families. We also provide an aging sensitivity training that can help staff have an understanding of what residents may be experiencing while living in the facility. So all of these are ways that we can try to make sure that we provide some assistance to the administrator about the situation, but remain on the resident side to make sure that we're not perceived as being on the facility side.
Did I miss anything, Amity? No, I think that's it. A nice balance between providing assistance with the administrator and staff, as well as making sure that you're not really giving a misperception of a conflict of interest. So I think that was a nice balance, and there's some really important points that I just wanted to reiterate. I liked how you said that when speaking with the administrator that, yes, you represent the resident's rights and you're the resident advocate. However, it's also important to make yourself available to the family member so they have an opportunity to share their concerns. I thought that was an excellent point. Introducing yourself to the family member and the resident so they have that opportunity to contact you. And, of course, offering training and technical assistance, especially if the staff are hesitant to work with the resident or there's a really challenging situation, because really I see that as being proactive in making sure the resident is receiving the care that they need and that staff have the tools they need in order to address challenging situations. So I think those are excellent points. One other thing I just wanted to reiterate is that obviously, there's never one right answer or one wrong answer. It obviously depends on every different situation. And as an ombudsman, if you felt that the facility, you know a history of perhaps the family member and you understand the facility has tried to work with the family member, had care plans with the family member and the resident, done proper paperwork and responding to complaints and so on, but the family member is still just really upset, that, like Cindy said, it is appropriate to reach out to that family member, explain the role of the Ombudsman Program, and give an opportunity to work with you. I think it's important. A lot of your job as an ombudsman is often modeling effective communication. So perhaps even encouraging that family member to join or start a family council may be another good way to get that family member involved in a more possibly productive way, especially if the resident doesn't have any of the same concerns, and give them an opportunity to network with other families and get support from other families and hopefully lodge their complaints in a different way. So I just wanted to share that as well. So thank you, Cindy, very much. We're going to go ahead and move on to the next scenario. It is about Mr. Smith. Mr. Smith is still upset about an incident regarding the care of his mother that occurred in the past and was discussed with the staff at the time of the incident. Reminders of this incident are triggered every time Mr. Smith has a concern about the care of his mother. Mr. Smith continues to bring up the past incidents each time he speaks with the facility staff, even if the past incident isn't related to his current concern. When he refers back to the prior incident, it upsets the staff, many of whom were not working at the facility at the time of that incident. Mr. Smith requests your assistance in addressing his current concerns about his mother's care. So the questions with that scenario were, what do you do? What are your concerns as an ombudsman? And write down a few statements you would make when speaking with Mr. Smith and his mother. We've asked Carmen Castro to respond, and she's a local ombudsman out of Houston, Texas, and her program covers Harris County. Carmen, go ahead and hit star 7 to unmute your line.
Okay. Thanks, Amity. I appreciate the opportunity to give some feedback. And I would just say that in dealing with Mr. Smith or anyone similar to him, I've had similar situations in the past. And first and foremost, you know, I would explain to him my role as an ombudsman and let him know, you know, the manner in which I could assist him as well as his mother. I would also speak with his mother definitely about any concerns she might have about the current situation. And because he keeps bringing up a past incident, you know, I would talk with him. I would ask him, you know, what are some of the lingering concerns that he continues to have with that incident? Because it seems as if he's having a hard time moving on. And sometimes, you know, family members and even residents as well have that, you know, hard time moving on from a very difficult incident that happened in the past. So I would try to settle that as best as possible, both with Mr. Smith and with his mother, if it is indeed a concern for her, and try to find out how, if at all, the incident that happened in the past relates to the current incident that is at hand right now. And, you know, and I would also, you know, once I had his permission as well as his mom's, I would speak to the staff and to the current staff and ask how best they can go about meeting the residents' needs, as well as address Mr. Smith's concerns about the past incident. And after addressing his, you know, Mr. Smith's lingering concerns, you know, I would ask him to at least try to give the staff, the new staff, an opportunity to take care of his mother. And, you know, to the best, to make sure that, you know, to meet her needs, try to do their best to meet her needs. And I would focus also on the current concerns Mr. Smith has, you know, has, as well as work with the facility and with his mother and with him to try to address the problem. And, you know, I would use reflective listening, and I would ask open-ended questions such as, you know, can you tell me about the incident that occurred in the past? You know, please share your concerns with me about your current problem, the current concern that you have, and find out if they were related in any way. And once I'd met with Mr. Smith's mother, with Mr. Smith, and, you know, with their permission, I'd talk to the facility staff, I would follow up to see how things were going. You know, my next visit to the facility after, you know, we'd work to resolve everything, I'd help them work to resolve everything, I'd follow up with Mrs. Smith on future visits just to make sure that things are indeed going well. And with her permission, I would also follow up with her son as well to ensure that he is happy as well with the care that his mother is receiving. And that's pretty much
great. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Carmen.
No, I was just going to say that's pretty much it.
Well, thank you very much, Carmen. I think you bring up some great points, especially with using the communication skills such as reflective listening and really hearing him out and listening to his lingering concerns and trying to find and determine whether there's any kind of relationship between those concerns and his current concerns. I wanted to take this opportunity to share some other tips that are included in the resource document that will be published on our website in the near future. Like Carmen said, especially if it's the first time you've spoken with him, listen to his entire story and validate what he's saying with reflective listening, just like she said. Explain that you understand that based on what he's experienced in the past, he may not trust the staff and he may not trust the answer that they give him to try to respond to his current complaint, but we, stressing we, need to work together to reestablish that trust during this new complaint resolution process. A technique used by a local ombudsman is to ask the family member to list the concerns that if the facility resolved them, would help restore trust in the facility, and then choose his top two concerns and work through those complaints with him and his mother and the facility staff. So hopefully once those concerns were addressed, maybe some trust would be restored and he could move on from those prior complaints. It may also be helpful to ask him to write down everything pertaining to the previous complaint that he keeps referring back to, and ask him to give that to you so you can keep it in your records and therefore refer back to it if necessary. For example, if it does pertain to a current complaint or a future complaint, then you'll have that information on file. So maybe the act of writing that all down and giving that to you may help him put that behind him. And it is okay if you're in the resolution process and speaking with him in meetings, or if you're facilitating, a care plan meeting with his mother, staff, and himself, if he keeps going back to that complaint, it is okay to redirect the conversation back to the current complaint. So it looks like we actually have about 2 minutes left to discuss this scenario. So I would like to see if anyone has any other suggestions they would like to mention. If you would raise your hand, and then I'll call on you. Okay. I don't see any hands raised. To let you know before we – I see one. Melanie McNeil, if you'll go ahead and hit *7 to unmute your line.
Hey, Amity, it's Melanie.
Hey.
Just one of the things, and I apologize, somebody might have said this and I just missed it, but I wonder sometimes when a family member raises issues over and over again, and depending on how the resident feels about things, if a different facility might be a suggestion too. I know that can be very disruptive for a resident, but especially – and I also realize, too, it's up to the resident whether they would stay or not. But as someone was mentioning, if the family member and the resident both feel that the staff, if they can't trust them, if they're always on edge about it, maybe that's an option. And maybe somebody said that. I apologize if they did.
No. Thanks for bringing that up. And I do think that that is a viable option to share with residents and family members, especially if they both have lost trust with the facility and just are not happy with the care. I think that is acceptable and definitely a good thing to bring up with both parties. So thank you for sharing that, Melanie.
Sure.
Before moving on to scenario 3, I also wanted to let you know that I have asked Cindy to send the in-service training that she mentioned in her response to Scenario 1. I've asked her to send that information to NORC, and so we will have that information available and share that with you when we post this webinar. So moving along to Scenario 3, Ms. Garcia is her mother's health – oh, and to mute your line if you'll hit star 6. Ms. Garcia is her mother's health care agent, per the health care power of attorney, and contacts you with concerns about her mother's care. You visit her mother to see if she shares her daughter's concerns and if she would like you to take any action. However, after your conversation, you're not really sure about the resident's decision-making capacity and her wishes. You're not clear whether you should be guided by the resident or her daughter, since Ms. Garcia is the designated health care agent. The questions we asked with the scenario were, what do you do, what are your concerns, and write down a few statements you would make when speaking with Ms. Garcia. And we have asked Lynn Pearson, Person to respond to this, and she's the state ombudsman for the District of Columbia. Thank you, Lynn.
Thanks, Amity. Hello, everyone. Well, first of all, there are a few things under what would I do. I think it's important to first validate the power of attorney. So I would request review the healthcare power of attorney that the daughter is stating that she has, because it might not be valid. And it also could be limited. So there could be limitations. So to find out specifically what powers she has in this capacity. Also to check and see if the records document any incapacity for the mother, and that it also has to be confirmed by the physician and the psychiatrist so that all the proper documentation is available if it's there, and see whether or not a psychiatric assessment is necessary if there isn't anything in the record, since I've already met with her and now am kind of undecided. Also, but regardless of what I find, I think I do need to determine what the wishes of the resident are, and that's what I would convey to both the daughter and with the facility. So it's real important to find out, you know, if the if Ms. Garcia, her mother, is able to make decisions. And but if there's a question about the capacity that's in the records, then the facility may actually then and should look to the daughter to make the decisions, and that the daughter should actually be making the decisions in the best interest of her mother, that follow her mother's wishes as closely as possible. So hopefully those things have been talked through where the mother and the daughter have had conversations about, you know, if this, then that. So the daughter will be making those decisions based on conversation with the mother or knowing her mother well enough. And one of the other things that I would do, too, is actually talk with staff about the mother, just to see what input they have about her decision-making and her capacity, not in a medical sense about the capacity, but how she responds in situations and decisions she makes when she's engaging with them. Some of my concerns, though, are that the resident, the mother may not think that she has a voice and that she needs to understand that she has rights regardless of her capacity. And so even though the daughter may have power of attorney, that doesn't mean that the mother still isn't able to make decisions about her life, including her health care. And also that the daughter needs to know that in her capacity as an agent, that she also has the duty to act in the best interest of her mother. And as I said before, and closely follow her mother's wishes, closely follow them, as closely as possible. And one of my other concerns, too, though, is that a family conflict may arise if the mother and daughter then aren't in agreement. If the daughter's not in agreement with what the mother's not in agreement with what the daughter's concerns are, and the daughter may want some action taken and the mother may not. So that's just a concern I have. A couple statements I would make with speaking with Ms. Garcia is to let her know, you know, about her mother's rights and share with her any concerns that the mother has. Also making sure that she understands that my role as an ombudsman is to advocate, you know, for her mother and making sure that her wishes are honored and also, you know, whatever those wishes are, but it's also within the law. And also that even though she has the power of attorney to make the decisions, that her mother can still make decisions as well if she is actually capable of doing so. And that's what I would, as an ombudsman, follow initially, is what the desires of the mother are. and that's it.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Lynn. I appreciate
You're welcome.
That. I think you've pretty much covered all the points I was going to follow up and address. Your response was very thorough, especially as far as reviewing the power of attorney and the fact that it actually does or could have limitations to it. Or, like you said, obviously she has the health care power of attorney here, but it depends on what kind of concerns that the daughter has and if the power of attorney even relates and the limitations. Looking at the type of complaint, and I really appreciate your comment about speaking with the staff, too, to get their input about whether the residents, about the resident's capacity and how she responds and makes choices and decisions. Because, like you stressed in your response, just because she has a power of attorney and a healthcare power of attorney, there are some decisions that the resident, her mother, may be able to make. Quality of life decisions, et cetera. However, her capacity may not be there to make major health care decisions. Hopefully she did have some kind of conversation with her daughter prior to those decisions. I also appreciated how you said that you would work with the daughter to help her understand about the resident's capacity. And even though she may have limitations, she still has rights. And it should be resident-directed, and things need to be made in the best interest. Decisions need to be made in the best interest of the resident. So I think those were the only things I was going to bring up. So I think you've addressed everything. Another thing that you may have mentioned and I might have missed was speaking with the family member and the staff to see if there's a specific time of day when the resident is most oriented. Perhaps maybe that's in the morning at the beginning of the day, and she might be able to respond better to your questions and really give you input as far as her decision-making abilities then. And like you mentioned, if the resident gives a consistent answer over time, so if the ombudsman makes a couple different visits and the answer is the same, then the ombudsman should accept that as an indication of the resident's wishes and advocate for her preferences in that situation. Again, I completely agree with you about this could lead, a concern would be this leading to a larger potentially family conflict down the line, maybe with Ms. Garcia's siblings, if she has any, and maybe the other sibling has the power of attorney for financial decisions or something of that nature. So that's just something else to consider and look out for. So we do have a couple more minutes to discuss this scenario. If anyone else wants to contribute any feedback, please raise your hand.
Amity,
yes.
This is Cindy.
Hi.
How are you? One of the areas that I have run into recently related to power of attorney in our facilities, and I don't know whether it is our facilities that are experiencing some kind of direction from their legal representation, but I've had a number of concerns lately with family members that have produced a power of attorney, and it is clear after dealing with the residents, oftentimes I've even had a resident that was on a special care unit where the facility wouldn't acknowledge that power of attorney as being active without actual documentation from a physician saying that that power of attorney was now currently in effect. And that seems to be something that I'm seeing more versus kind of in the past. A lot of times, as long as the family had a power of attorney and they were working with the facility, I did not have a lot of facilities that were actually looking for hard evidence documentation of whether that power of attorney was in effect or not, just to be aware of that.
Thank you very much for sharing that. And I think you might be spot on when you say that facilities are getting different advice from their attorneys. that they need to really be mindful of making sure that the proper documentation is available, like going back to what Lynn said about looking in the records to make sure that the incapacity is documented and confirmed. So I think that's a great point to bring up and something to certainly be aware of. Another aspect of this situation would be, as an ombudsman, part of your role is educating and reminding the facility that even though a family member has power of attorney, if the resident still has capacity, that they have to follow the resident's choices and perspective. In my previous work as an ombudsman, I found myself often reminding facilities of that because I think they felt as if they needed to cater to the family member often more than the residents, and sometimes the family members were more vocal, or they maybe paid, and they were private pay residents, and they paid for their mother's stay, and so they would listen to the family member and state, well, they have power of attorney. However, the resident still had capacity and could make their own decisions. So I think that's something else to be aware of and something you probably all already do. Thank you very much for your response, Lynn, and thanks for the extra feedback, Cindy.
You're welcome.
Okay. So moving along to our discussion questions. Now, these are open. Oh, I'm sorry. I just now see a hand raised. Jean, if you wanted to respond to that last scenario, we do have a couple minutes. You can hit *7 to unmute your line.
Amity. Jeannie.
Yeah, hi.
One of the things that I also see as an ombudsman is family members, I don't like to use the word coerced, but it almost appears to be coercion, to have their parent or family member sign a power of attorney because a situation has arisen that they don't agree with. And that gives me great cause for concern.
Thank you for bringing that up. And I completely understand, and I think that's a very valid concern. And unfortunately have seen stuff like that as well. So, again, I can't reiterate, obviously, the importance of an ombudsman in educating that resident and supporting them and empowering them, especially when you feel like the family member may have used some manipulation or coercion to get that power of attorney signed. So thank you for sharing that. Okay, so moving on to discussion question number one. These questions are open for discussion for anyone on the call. So what we'll do is just raise hands. That would be great if you want to respond, and then we'll call on you. So the first question is, when providing information to family members for self-advocacy, what is the ombudsman role in ensuring that resident wishes are respected? Do you have a process for determining which questions or situations require providing only information and consultation to the family versus questions or issues that trigger the need to speak with the resident to ensure the resident's voice is not overruled by a family member? So I know those are lengthy questions, but I'm trying to get to the situation where you may be in your office one day and you answer the phone and it's a family member and they're asking a certain question that raises a flag to you that perhaps instead of just providing them information and consultation, you should also visit the resident and make sure that the resident's rights are being respected. So would anyone like to share their experience, ideas, or process? You can just, oh, yay, a hand raised. I see one. Okay, Joan, thanks for raising your hand. If you'll hit *7 to unmute your line. Hello, Joan. You can hit *7 on your phone to unmute your line. That would be great. Okay. Anyone else want to raise their hand and share? Okay, I see that Nancy Madsen has her hand raised. If you will hit *7 to unmute your line, Nancy. Hello? Okay, so let's go to Cindy. Cindy, your hand's raised. Star 7, please.
Okay. One of the things that we do or that we use in our office is as families are asking questions, we'll provide general technical assistance a lot of times when they are asking about processes, so how to make a complaint, who's the best person to speak to about a complaint, kind of what to expect if they bring a concern to the facility. We'll talk to them about the process and things like that. If it is something more specific for their actual loved one, and it has more of a feel that it's going to be an actual case or a concern, then a lot of times I can give them or will give them the same answer and then ask them or let them know, check to see if it's okay that the next time I'm in the facility, if I can kind of check in with their family member or for the family to let them know that I'll stop by and see them, oftentimes to kind of check in with the resident and make sure that, again, kind of their family's concerns are the resident's concerns. Most times they turn out to be that way, but it's not a specific process, but it's more the understanding the type of question that the family's asking.
Great. Thank you, Cindy. Joan?
Yep. Can you hear me now?
I can. Thank you.
just for the rest of the people out there, because it sounds like I wasn't alone, I was hitting star 7 on the computer, not the phone, and it took me a minute to realize what I was doing. Anyways, yeah, I feel pretty much the same way as the last person that was speaking. You know, if a family member calls, what I'm going to talk with a family member about, for the most part, is just general basic rights, without getting into any specifics. And if they really have a specific situation that they want to discuss, I'm going to try to set up a time to either meet with them and the resident or the resident alone. Usually I try to talk to a resident quick before we have a family meeting. Because so often those residents, even after the powers of attorney are activated, have got so much to add to the discussion, and very frequently goals aren't always aligned. So for just general discussion about what are the rights of people in facilities, I'm comfortable with that, but once you get into specifics, I think the resident really needs to be pulled into it.
Excellent. Thank you, Joan. Sorry about the phone pad versus computer thing, but thank you for your input. Nancy, would you like to hit star 7 and respond? Or you can send us your phone number through the chat feature and we can unmute you. While you're working on that, I see that Rose Floyd, her hand is raised as well. Rose, if you'll hit star 7, please.
Hello.
Oh, and Joan.
Hello.
Joan, hit star 7 to mute, or star 6 to mute. Hi, Rose.
Hi, this is Rose Floyd. I'm in King County Long-Term Care Ombudsman Office, and there are actually several of us here who are ombudsman. But I wanted to share my thoughts on the question.
Great.
Can you hear me?
Okay. Yes, I can. Thank you.
Okay, great. Well, you know, it's a great question, and I'm glad you're causing me to think about this. I think that when I'm talking to a family member about kind of very specific things like perhaps a billing issue, I feel comfortable sending them the regulation relating to what's expected in our state in disclosure and what the facility is required to do. But if I'm talking to a family member about something that could potentially cause the resident to move their home, like an involuntary discharge, or something with a lot of emotion and a lot of conflict and disagreement around it, that would cause me pause to say that we need to kind of anchor our actions around what the resident's wishes are. Because I guess I'm sensitive to anything that could be used to say, well, I spoke to the ombudsman's office and they said that involves a resident's specific living situation and things that would be more, you know, their preference.
thank you, Rose, and thanks to all the other ombudsmen listening in there with in your office with you. That is an excellent point. Two things I'd like to reiterate that you said. First, anchoring your actions around what the resident wants, I think, is a perfect summary. And I completely agree about being mindful and about the whole, I spoke with the ombudsman and this is what they said, especially when someone is calling you other than the resident. So thank you. Those are excellent points. We need to move on to the next discussion question, but a few ideas that you've already touched on. Information, especially if they're asking about guardianship of a resident. I know I've received calls where family members will be inquiring about the steps to take guardianship or apply for guardianship. Anything to do with, like you said, billing or funds, especially what may turn into an involuntary discharge. Or if a family member calls saying that their loved one wants to leave a nursing home and they don't agree with their loved one and they're asking you how to prevent that from happening. And if a caller calls you asking about visitation rights because there's a family member or friend or someone they don't like that's visiting the resident. So those are just some other things that came to mind as some things that may raise a red flag. So moving on to discussion question two, and thank you so much for your feedback on the first one. This one was, a family member who's also the president of the family council is not pleased with the outcome of a complaint you assisted her with, and she is telling other family members in the facility that the ombudsman program is powerless and not effective in resolving complaints. What do you do? So please raise your hand if you would like to respond to this discussion question. Well, I'm glad to see that there aren't any people talking negatively about the programs out there. Okay, I see Joan. You have your hand raised. Hit *7, please, to unmute your line.
I think I got it this time.
All
this
right.
Is interesting.
Hi,
this actually happened to me about a month ago. It wasn't family care, the family council president, and it was actually one family member talking to another family member and telling them, don't bother to call the ombudsman because she isn't worth anything anyways.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a tough position to be in because the reason that the first gentleman was not happy with what I could do for him is that I couldn't do what he wanted done without getting into a lot of details, but what he wanted done wasn't what his mother wanted done, and I wasn't going to support it. But I just chose to take the high road, and I didn't confront it, didn't do anything like that. The one thing that I would do possibly in this situation, if it was the president of the family council, I would go to that person and request to do spend some time with the family council, do a little bit of an in-service on the ombudsman program and what we can do and what we can't do, and make sure that other people in the facility are aware that we're there and what are the things that we can help with and what are the things that we really can't do much with.
Excellent. Yes. Thank you, Joan. That was one of the first steps on my list, was to ask to be invited to the family council meeting to really explain the role of the ombudsman program and respond to any kind of questions they have. So thank you.
Yeah, I'm Abel. I've been doing this job for 13 years now, and I've been covering the same facilities for most of them, so I've got a pretty good reputation. So I have the ability, because of longevity, to sort of sit back and not feel the need to take on the argument. You know, somebody newer in the position probably would want to handle it possibly differently.
That's a really good point, Joan. Longevity is really crucial, and not, like you said, not everyone can benefit from that, or if a perhaps an ombudsman comes to a facility where they didn't have the best reputation beforehand and you're replacing, you know, your predecessor didn't have the best reputation for whatever reason, or, you know, it's just one family member that may just be difficult to please, or you can't take action on their complaint. So thank you. Those are very important points. Susan, to mute your line, hit *6. I see your hand raised, Susan. It's *7 to unmute, please.
Hi. One of the things that I do when I'm speaking with
administrators at conferences when we have roundtable discussions is I talk about the ombudsman program coming in and doing a town hall meeting on their family night with all the families and the residents and the staff that is there to explain what the ombudsman program is, how we operate, and to encourage the families at that moment to start family councils and to also encourage the residents to start a resident council if they haven't already done so. And then once we've already explained the families that have been there and their staff and all that, they have a pretty good understanding about what the ombudsman program is.
Excellent point. Thank you, Susan. One other point to mention before moving on to the next discussion question. Obviously, this may not work in all programs because they're all different SICE programs across the country. But if it appears that the situation will not be resolved with this family member after you've spoken with them, explained your role, explained, you know, what you can and can't do on their complaint and so on, if it doesn't seem to get better, if there's another volunteer ombudsman or staff ombudsman that perhaps that family member could work with in the future, especially if you have to work with a family member because the resident lacks capacity, then that may be something else to do as well as another suggestion before it escalates. So moving to before we discuss question number three, I'd like to ask another poll question. Have you ever been accused of being on the side of the facility by either a family member or a resident? Great. Thank you for responding to that question. It keeps varying depending on who's answering at the moment, but it's almost split 50-50 with a little bit more in the no category that they haven't been accused of that. So that leads into discussion question three, which is avoiding actual or perceived conflict of interest is critical in order to have an effective long-term care ombudsman program. Have you ever been accused of being on the side of the facility due to a family member's perception of conflict of interest? If so, how did you respond, and what steps do you take to prevent a perception of conflict of interest? Again, if anyone wants to share, please raise your hand. Let me ask another question for the 40-some-odd percent that responded that, yes, they have been accused of that. What happened? How did you respond in that particular situation, if at all? And did you change your behavior to make sure it didn't happen again? Anyone? Okay. Cindy, your hand's raised. If you'll hit star 7, please.
Yeah, one of the pieces that we've used when families kind of start down that road, and what I have found to be true is oftentimes when the family's desires differ significantly from their residents, even though I may have satisfied the resident, because the family's initial concern, in their opinion, was not addressed, was not corrected, they oftentimes then start to come back with, well, you're on the facility side, or, you know, you're just doing this because you don't want to deal with what I'm concerned about. And oftentimes we try to just kind of remind the families again that they are oftentimes not the, you know, that our primary responsibility is to that resident, And reminding facilities also that our primary responsibility is to the resident, and putting everything kind of back into that context on a consistent basis has helped.
Yes, I agree, and that I think that's really important that you mentioned that, Cindy, that they can go down. You can see it going down that road, especially when the residents' choices differ from the family members, and they don't share the same concerns or complaints, or don't want you to pursue the complaints that the family member has. I think that's a really important point to bring up. Anyone else would like to respond? Joan, *7, please.
Yeah, I agree with everything that was just said by the previous person as well. I always try to bring it back to the residents. You know, I'm not on anybody's side but the resident's side. Sometimes I've been in situations, and if I really feel that the person that's calling me into question needs validation, that's very often when perhaps I'll suggest that they file a formal complaint with the regulatory people, because when the regulatory people look at it, come back with the exact same answer that I had, which was basically either you're not entitled to it or it can't be done, you get that second vote, so sometimes it makes them believe it a little bit more that you really just for whatever reason are powerless at that moment and can't get them what they think they should have.
Thank you, Joan. I think that's a very very valid, very sound option to refer them to the regulatory entity if they have a complaint, especially if they're saying that you are on the side of the facility. And again, like was mentioned in the previous discussion, if possible, if your program size or structure allows, perhaps getting that particular family member to work with a different ombudsman, whether it's a different volunteer or a different staff ombudsman or so on, that may be an option as well. Rose, I see your hand raised as well. Thank you. You can hit *7 to unmute.
Yes, hi. Do you hear me?
Hi,
I'm Lexor Green. I'm Lexor Green with the King County Long-Term Care Ombudsman Program.
Oh,
and I had I received a group letter from a facility with all of their different complaints. And at the end they said they knew they were not going to be heard because I favor the facility rather than them. So what I did, I read the letter. I talked to my ombudsman that I had assigned there. I sent their whole group letter plus my letter that this was a very difficult facility and that we'd worked with them off and on for 3 years. So the state sent out an investigator, sat down with all those people, and they all denied having any problems, that everything was going swell and that they'd changed their minds. So my next step is that I'm going to see if I can become invited to their next resident council meeting to find out what happened, what changed, because did everything get perfect before the investigator was able to get out there, but just what happened. I need to know what happened between the time they sent me this long group letter and the time that the investigator came out there and then got back with me that I was not working on their behalf because they said everything was wonderful.
Hmm.
So it hasn't ended yet.
Well,
but I intend to research it. Okay, I intend
yeah.
to research and find out what happened. Were they just venting to me? Did they just want to vent? They might have just wanted to vent and not take it any further. So that's my personal scenario.
Well, thank you for sharing that that actual situation, that real situation. Was the group letter, did you say it was from a group of residents or a group of family members?
It was from a whole group of residents. From
okay.
the last resident council they had met, they'd taken all the complaints from each individual person. They had listed their names, what was happening with them. And then at the very end of it was a very long letter, they said, we're sure nothing's going to happen with this because our ombudsman is on the side of the facility.
Okay. And did they copy the regulatory entity? Is that on their letter, or did you just send that directly to them?
No, they didn't copy anything like that. They just had, you know, statement number one by so-and-so, statement number two, we're crying for help, we need your help, but we know nothing's going to happen.
Okay. Yeah, that's definitely a very interesting situation, and I'm glad you're going to follow up with them and see what happened between the time that they spoke with regulatory and when they sent you that letter. That's interesting.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I was thinking maybe they thought there would be some retaliation, or maybe they were just trying to vent. But I shall find out what happened to all of their complaints.
Well, thank you for sharing that situation.
Star six.
Thank you. Okay, so thank you so much for responding and participating in this discussion. I think it was really enlightening. I'd like to go on to the next poll question. And that question is, did you have what you can call an aha moment during this webinar with any, I put new in quotation marks because it may not be a new idea. It could just be a recycled idea that you heard again, idea or tip during this webinar that that really struck you.
Did anybody have any?
Yeah, we did. Absolutely. I did.
And if you can hit star six to mute your line, that would be great. Thank you.
Oh.
Excellent. So the answers are coming in, and it looks like at least almost 75% of the respondents had one of those type of aha moments, so that's great. I asked that question to see if you do have a moment like that, could you share what your aha moment was with the rest of the group, because it may give them ideas, and how will you use this information in your work? If you would like to respond, please raise your hand. Anyone? Or if you don't feel comfortable speaking on the phone, instead of raising your hand, you could enter what your aha moment was in the chat feature and just send it to us via chat message. And then I could share it with the rest of the group. Okay, Melanie, I see your hand raised. If you can hit star 7 to unmute your line, that would be great.
Hello, this is Melanie.
Hi, Melanie.
Hi, I think one of, not really an aha moment, but a good reminder for me, you mentioned that one of the primary goals of the ombudsman program is to empower others to advocate. And sometimes, I guess I should say, I'm a local long-term care ombudsman from the state of Iowa. One of the things that I often forget is that I'm not the only advocate and that we can't resolve every situation, but I should be looking at ways to empower people to advocate for residents as well, and also advocate for themselves if they're able to. So that was a good reminder for me today. Thanks.
You're welcome, and thank you for sharing that, Melanie. I think no matter if you're a new ombudsman or a very experienced ombudsman, I think that reminder is very helpful. Ombudsmen, sometimes we may tend to do more than advocating for others to do their job or empower them to advocate on their own. So great point. Thank you for bringing that up. Carmen, mute your line at star 6. And Carmen, if you can unmute, hitting star 7.
Amity, hey, it's Carmen. I really appreciated the problem-solving process for families, that toolkit. That was the chart. It was very impressive, and it's just a very succinct way of it's a very good, succinct reminder and summary of the process. So thank you for that.
You're welcome, and I certainly can't take full credit for that. Robin Grant developed this paper and many, many of the resources that are going to be in the appendix. So thank you, Robin, and thanks, Carmen, for saying that. I think someone else sent that in a chat message as well. Some other messages I'm getting are from Nancy. She said she likes doing staff trainings on resident rights and facilities, and would like to take this also into resident councils and family councils, which is great. Thank you. Pamela Peterson suggested doing, or really liked the idea of kind of doing a town hall meeting, and she'll try this with several of the facilities she visits. Anyone else like to share any aha moment? I would also like to know how you plan on, or if you plan on, sharing the information that we covered today with family members you work with, or perhaps if you're a staff ombudsman, your volunteer ombudsman, if you're not doing so right now. Anyone like to share? Okay, I see Rose, your hand raised. You can hit star 7, please.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Thank you.
This is not Rose Floyd. This is Sammy Hopkins, and I'm one of the entourage of King County Ombudsman sitting here for this webinar.
Hi.
Thank you very much for all this information. Some of it was recycled, and but yet very important to be reminded of the basic techniques of communication, and thank you for that. I think a couple things that stick out to me, this conversation about guardianships and DPOAs and POAs, I learned as a staff ombudsman, I guess you might call it the hard way, on a number of occasions with this conversation. It's very important, and I intend, as you asked, what would we be doing with this, to go over this stories from the field, as I call it, in my territory with the North End, what I experience, I try to share with the community ombudsman in monthly meetings, and the idea of confirming the DPOA, POA, and guardianship paperwork has come up many times in my experience. Specifically, one that comes to mind is that it would have been very helpful for me to not take for granted, if you will, confirm this, the situation involved one identified singular DPOA when, in fact, every one of the siblings of the family was listed as co-DPOAs on the actual document, which would have changed significantly the conversation. So it's very important to reiterate that message, to confirm that documentation, to see it, and also for the facilities to have it on board as well, not only for emergency contact information, but that they need to have that information in the residents' case files. That kind of harkens to our adult family home model in Washington State, where we have a little less credential involved with that type of a long-term care facility and training. So we are often, as ombudsman, involved in an ongoing training with facilities because of that model. It's part of our duties in Washington as ombudsman. So I appreciate that reminder of the DPOA guardianship, POA confirmation. That's important to remember, even when you have experience, to not take that for granted.
I couldn't agree more, and I think some of your peers agree as well, because those are some of the comments we received in the chat box. So thank you very much for reiterating that.
You're welcome. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We really hope that you will take this training today. As I said earlier, the webinar will be recorded and posted on our website in the very near future. The paper that I mentioned is in the final review process, so we will post that as soon as we can. We will notify you through the Gazette, the weekly email from Consumer Voice and NORC, also an email to our Ombudsman Network, and then we'll post a notice on the homepage of our website once these materials are posted. So I do want to reiterate in closing, the role of the ombudsman when working with families obviously varies depending on the resident's capacity and the situation. Ombudsmen may serve as mediators, negotiators, educators, brokers, or consultants. Since family members may need someone outside of the long-term care facility who understands regulations, how facilities operate, and about good care practices, Oftentimes, the most important role of the ombudsman is to be an active listener and provide information. As noted earlier, empowering family members does not mean ignoring resident rights, preferences, or decisions. So the Family Advocacy Toolkit, like I said, is part of that bigger paper, and that will be sent out whenever that paper is finalized. There will also be some other documents in the appendix. A couple examples are a 2 to 3 page documents with titles and links called Resources for Family Members, and another one that may be helpful for you when you're explaining the role of the Ombudsman Program is a Frequently Asked Questions about the Ombudsman Program document. Last but not least, I want to extend a big thank you to Lynn, Cindy, and Carmen for sharing their perspectives and insight regarding the scenarios. I would obviously also like to thank Robin Grant for writing this skills training paper and creating several of the resources that created really the content for this webinar. And thank you for joining our training today and for the work that you do daily on behalf of individuals receiving long-term care services and supports. At the end of this webinar, when we close it out, there will be a link directing you to a SurveyMonkey survey. If you could complete that evaluation about this webinar, we would really appreciate it because we are always trying to develop training that meets your needs. So thank you very much and have a great week. Take care.
Thank you. Please stand by.